Rise and Shine with Robbo and Becky on Vision.
Robbo and Alex with you. We're going to start right here with a guest that we're introducing this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Stephen Dale.
Good morning,
Alex. A long
pause
in between for a special reason. Well, how are you?
I'm very well, but not a morning person.
Neither am I, so that's right. That makes two of us.
Yeah. That's why we both look similar, but
that's it.
On the
exactly.
Radio, you can't tell.
That's it. We've got good faces for radio.
That's
but look,
right.
Great to have you here, mate. We mentioned that you're the author of a book, Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom.
Yes.
It's your life story. And you literally did hit rock bottom. Fortunately, you have bounced back from that. But take us back even before that, like your growing up years. What sort of led you to the point where you had this tragic accident?
Grew up in a Christian home, attended church from day one. Just loved hearing about Jesus. All my friends were at church. All of my sport was playing for the church in cricket or whatever it would be. My entire life was church. My family are very close Christians, so we had a lot of Bible studies at my house. So very, I guess Christianity was solid, 23 hours a day, 7 days a week, and everything was great. Life was wonderful. I was relatively good at everything, like school and sports. And then I went to high school, and it all changed when I went to high school. So going to high school, because I had such a beautiful upbringing, I had nothing but friends. I never knew bullying existed. I never knew that people had hard times. I thought that everyone loved and forgave each other. And then I went to high school where it was a very large high school. I didn't know anybody apart from my sister, 2 years older than me. And because I was small and ultra polite and with a set of good ears, things just didn't work out for me almost immediately. I was just easily picked on, and I didn't know how to handle it. And that just led me down the path of, as you know, bullies, they'll try to start off with, and if you fight back or you are difficult, they'll stop.
Yeah.
But if you fall under their spell very quickly, pretty soon everybody's your bully. And from the time I was in grade eight, a lovely boy, to the time I left high school with an alcohol problem, self-image problem, self-identity, turned my back completely on God and everything about it. So that 5 years completely changed my entire life and my entire mindset, and my belief was all but destroyed.
That's amazing. Wow. It's incredible how that just, you know, like you said, just essentially going to high school made that change. How did your family deal with that? I mean, obviously you've grown up in a loving Christian family and they're watching their son, you know, change before their eyes. I mean, how did they sort of deal with that?
I guess you could best ask mum and dad for an answer to that, apart from the fact that I just didn't let on for a long period of time, like just about everybody. You don't want to admit that you're hated. You don't want to tell anybody that you just don't fit in, especially your parents that think the world of you.
Yeah.
They know you so well from, you know, my entire life was home life and church life. I was very popular at church, no more popular than anybody else, but everything was great to going to school and living through this and then just becoming a 24-hour, 7 days a week liar, liar to everybody, liar about myself.
That's amazing. So you kept up appearances at home and church, but behind the scenes things weren't going so well.
Well, I had this little trick that when I walked home, when I got home and I walked up the stairs, from stairs, I changed. I was who I was at school because I had to be that to survive, and the best way to not be bullied is to be like them. So all the things that they were involved in, which were anti me when I was a young kid, that's who I was at school, thinking that the more I was like them, the less they were likely to punish me or notice me. And then when I came home, when I stood at the bottom of the stairs, it would be, now it's time for the good boy, everything's wonderful. I'm going to be asked how school is, and I'm going to lie and say, oh, it's great, lots of friends, everything's fantastic. And then I would go to my room and I would just turn the self-hatred on, and it started from there.
That's amazing. What an incredible, I guess, journey through those teenage years. I mean, teenage years are hard enough without, you know, adding bullying into the mix and, you know, dealing with all those different challenges. You mentioned that you left school, you know, with an alcohol problem and, I guess, you know, that self-hatred. And that obviously led to, you know, some pretty dramatic moments in your young adult life. We'll hear some of that shortly, and I guess where the title of the book comes from, Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom. As I said, it was a literal hitting of rock bottom that you experienced. We'll hear more of the story. Stephen Dale is with us this morning.
Always encouraging and always fun. Rise and shine on Vision.
It's Robbo and Alex with you and our special guest joining us this hour.
Yeah, author Stephen Dale, author of this book, amazing book, Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom. So that is almost, it's pretty much a literal front cover. You actually hit rock bottom.
It didn't take me long to think of a good title for my book.
Yeah.
Well, it was a
surprise
story that flowed out of, you were just telling us a few minutes ago about the bullying that you experienced in high school. You'd sort of grown up in a loving Christian home, you know, active in your church, but experiencing bullying at school, and that really shifted you as a young person, as a teenager, and ended up, I guess, veering way away from that Christian lifestyle that you'd only known as a child. You left school just basically with a lot of, alcohol issues. Your self-esteem was, absolutely bottomed out as well. And that led you to this experience that you talk about in the book. What actually happened on that fateful evening?
To get down to Melbourne, which is where the accident was, on Phillip Island, I had run away from Brisbane. There was an opportunity and I felt like all of my problems are Brisbane. If I can leave Brisbane, all of my problems will be gone because they're not my fault. So I went down to Sydney. Pretty soon, all the same problems, same people, same issues. Ran away to Melbourne, ran away to Sydney. Sorry, ran away back then to Tasmania, then back to Melbourne. Running. Ended up in Melbourne, found myself in a lot of trouble. I had nowhere to go. I had run out of money. I was drying out. A whole lot of issues, and I just happened to run across or meet two guys who were just really good fellas, which I wasn't used to meeting a lot of good fellas. And these two guys just happened to be Christians. Mm. And I had done my very best to get Christianity and Christians out of my life. And I had done a really good job, by the way. But these two guys came along, and even though they were Christians, I decided to hang out with them. And they invited me down to Phillip Island one day because I was working in a bar, which is a good place for an alcoholic to work.
Yeah, that's right.
And they gave me the opportunity to just take the day off work. So we went down to Phillip Island for the day, and the accident happened at Phillip Island after I had been drinking. And we'd stopped by a pub. I'd been drinking. We found ourselves at this cliff or at the base of this cliff. And I decided that the best thing that I could do was climb it.
Oh, wow.
Even though I'd been drinking, even though I was always drinking, even though I had no tread on my shoes from basically walking down the east coast of Australia and around Tasmania, one of the things that I'd learned at school was that I am not good enough. I was not good enough. I've got to do something to make people look at me. And the more dangerous the thing to do, the more they looked at me. And that had started at high school, but this is at the age of 21, and that habit was well and truly set. And so I climbed this cliff, and if you can see the picture of the cliff, it's 90 degrees.
That's right, it's just a sheer.
It's a good-looking cliff. If you're going to fall off a cliff, make sure it's that one because that's a good-looking cliff.
Yeah. Wow.
So I climbed, and I slipped at about the – it says 30 meters in the book because that was the original police report. But Google Earth has shown me that it's closer to 30 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so – I slipped, I fell down a cliff face. The story in full is in the book, of course, but these two Christian gentlemen fought for my life through five heart attacks, CPR. I was a very big fella. I had massive, massive head injuries, dislocated spine, and when they were working on me, because the accounts of those two guys are in the book, but they realized that I had also broken my sternum and the ribs associated. So as they were pushing down on me for 45 minutes through five heart attacks, they were breaking my ribs and bones into my lungs. So that was perforating my lungs. So I was drowning in my own blood as well. It was just
extraordinary. That you survived.
Well, thankfully, there was two Christian guys who would not give up on me. 45 minutes is a long time to give CPR through five heart attacks where it just continued to get worse. Lots of blood. I was a very big fella. I worked out a lot. I was strong, which saved a large part of me, but also gave me the body that allowed me to be worked on for that length of time. There was a whole lot of issues. God was certainly looking out for me over that accident. There's no way, especially my brain injury, especially my head injuries and my facial injuries and my internal organ injuries to survive that day, the loss of blood, the loss of skin, all of those issues. But those two guys fought for me until someone came along and saw it and called the ambulance. So the helicopter came in, then the helicopter couldn't land on the beach, so it had to land on top of the cliff. So then the helicopter had to reverse park, basically, onto the beach because it was such a narrow inlet and the blades were missing the rocks by inches. I mean, it would have been a great thing to see. I wish I had been there.
You want to make a movie?
One of the two guys, he just tells that story of how he was watching the chopper thinking, they are not going to be able to get in here.
Wow.
But the chopper just managed this incredible landing. Then the ambulance office got out and told us, the two guys, Rob and Dave, what had gone on, and they told them. And how long have you been doing this? Oh, probably 40, 45 minutes. How many times has he gone? 5, I reckon. And when he goes, how long does he go for? 2 or 3 minutes, man. Sometimes it's even longer than 3 minutes. Mate, and they were just told, then let me go. I'm only alive. My heart is only beating because they are making a beat.
Yeah.
With my brain injury, is stopping my heart from, excuse me, from beating. And they said, basically, well, if that's your attitude, then get back on your chopper and leave, because we didn't do this for you to come here and tell us to stop.
Yeah.
So, look, there's a lot of things happen. I eventually made my way onto the helicopter and flying off to the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne.
That's amazing. Wow. So this is 30 years ago that this event took place.
Yes.
I mean, clearly you've survived, but, I mean, it wasn't just a miraculous recovery, was it? I mean,
all those kinds of injuries.
It was a miraculous recovery, but I believe that the Lord knew me well enough that if he had have healed me in one day, I would have been back in the pub that night.
Mm.
Instead, I had a 1 year in hospital in 4 different hospitals and then 10 years rehab, basically having to learn how to read, how to write, how to speak, how to do all those things again because of my brain injury. Mm. I also suffered a stroke when I was in my coma.
Oh, really?
So a stroke on top of a major brain injury.
Wow.
And major spinal issues, dislocated spine, all these heart problems. I basically tore my liver in half from all of the CPR. Mm. It basically just kept ripping my liver.
Wow.
Look, it's...
You're going to sue those two blokes for doing so much damage to you.
Look, I can't thank them enough.
Where are they now?
Yeah.
Are you still in contact with the two guys that saved you, or did you lose contact with them?
No, we're still in contact, less and less so over the years. One of the two guys more than the other guy, and Dave, the man in Albury Wodonga, we text each other, we catch up every now and again. I tend to let him know, or he reminds me of when the anniversary of my accident is. The great thing is that when I wrote my book, I sent him a copy, and he did not know me before the accident, and after I flew home after my time in hospital coming out of the coma, he didn't see me again. So I was just this absolute lightning bolt of a person for that short period of time.
Wow.
But he had no idea where I was from, who I was, what happened to me, apart from stories feeding down to him from Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
So by reading the book, he found out who I was. He also found out what role he played in this incredible story.
Yeah. Mm.
And also he taught his family, especially his daughters, what sort of man he is by allowing them to read the book.
Mm.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And then so he got this extra benefit out of this.
Yeah.
And it's just been an extraordinary journey in so many different ways for so many people.
That's amazing. It really is an incredible story. Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom is the name of the book. We're hearing the story this morning with Stephen Dale, and there's still more to tell. Of course, so you talked about that 10 years of rehab and all the recovery that was a part of that, and I guess also the God encounters that came along the way as well, as you were running from God, but he got you in a very...
You can't run fast enough or long enough to get away from God.
So we'll hear more of the story soon with Steve Dale with us this morning, the author of Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom.
Rise and Shine on Vision Christian Radio. Save me from what could have
been. That is Matt Hammett and Could Have Been, and very appropriate lyrics for our guest this morning. Stephen Dale is with us.
Yeah.
Save me from what could have been. I mean, you should have died 30 years ago at the base of a cliff. You tried to climb it, you fell, but you were saying that thanks to a couple of Christian blokes that you'd met, they literally just wouldn't give up on you as they worked to save your life.
they wouldn't give up on me, and they had every opportunity to give up on me. It was close to the tide coming in that we were going to get water on us pretty soon. I had massive injuries, very obviously massive injuries. I mean, as soon as they ran around to me or climbed down to me, they noticed that there was blood coming out of my right ear, and the blood turned to brain fluid very quickly.
Oh, wow.
And then my right eye fell in behind my nose because of all the facial damage that I had caused.
Wow.
My legs were – it looked like my back had broken because of the position that my legs were in. The look of my neck showed that my neck had broken, but I was still twitching. So obviously something was still intact, but – also, my head was buried in amongst these rocks, so they had to pick me up by the clothes and carry me. And I was a big fella. I mean, I would have been about 95 to 100 kilos.
Wow.
These are two smaller guys. So carrying me with all the blood, with all the wonder of, is it too late for this guy anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
And in Dave's account in the book, he talks about, you know, Should we bother? Are we actually, if we do save this guy, is he going to be glad that he's alive?
Oh, that's right, exactly.
Because he looks well and truly gone, and he's got major brain injuries, major facial injuries. Things are only going to get worse.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So
here you are.
Well, that's right.
Absolutely. And look at how good looking I am. I'm unbelievable. I used to be so much better looking. But anyway, on the radio, I can say whatever I like.
That's so true. Well, you mentioned a 10-year rehab after this time. So they got you through. I mean, obviously, you got to hospital. You survived the night, which is a miracle in itself. But then a 10-year rehab. What was the process of that? Because obviously, there was that thought of, you know, is it going to be worth a life worth living? You know, if you're going to be ending up, you know, with brain damage, or you know, you've got, you know, you're in a wheelchair or whatever the case may be. But you know, clearly, you know, you've worked through that journey, and God's you know, done a bit of a number on you.
Well, when the first night when my parents were contacted in Brisbane, they were told to please fly down tonight because I won't be alive tomorrow. So come down, say goodbyes. They came down. Saw the awful state that I was in. There's a real story about that, which we don't necessarily have time for, but it was a very, very difficult time for my family. A year in hospital, or close to a year in four different hospitals, going from different hospitals when I needed brain work, or when I needed spinal fusion, or when I needed a lot of things. So my rehab was basically that when my time at hospital had finished, the hospital did not believe, or the medical fraternity did not believe, that I could recover.
Right.
That my injuries were too severe, and in those days it wasn't believed that the brain rebuilt itself. It was believed that a damaged brain stays damaged. So I came home after nearly a year. I had lost the abilities to read, to write, to speak, to organise, to dress myself properly, to communicate, to do a whole lot of things. Some days were better than others, where I seemed like I had really come out of it, where I could just get out of bed and shower. Plus, I was in a body cast from upper chest to knees for 4 months.
Oh, wow.
And had lost 45 kilograms of body weight. So I was 6'2" at that time, 6'1½" after the spinal surgery, and I weighed 51 kilos, which is a bit of a sight. So the rehab was basically me believing, or me being told constantly, that I wouldn't recover, that really don't try. I can remember my doctor, one of my doctors, telling the nurses right in front of me in hospital, talk Mr. Dale out of trying so hard, because he will only ever be disappointed.
Oh, wow.
That's awful.
So that was the information that kept on being received by me. So when I came home, I received a visit saying that I'll be given a lifetime pension. There's no work for me. You don't have to do anything. You'll receive this. You'll just have to requalify every year. So basically, I had every opportunity to just not work, just give up, just watch daytime television, which is a brain injury all by itself. But I just thought I was, and still am to a much to a very large extent, I'm a very aggressive person. Not aggressive like angry. I certainly was angry and fighting, but aggressive like, if I want to get something done, I got to get it done. And that was still with me when I came home, and my rehab was the 10 years at home when I taught myself how to read, I taught myself how to write, and I taught myself how to speak, which is so difficult. But all of those things came from the fact that I could not be taught. I could not receive information. Mm-hmm. I just went into a severe anxiety. I vomited a lot when I was anxious. All those problems, I couldn't be helped. Even though I needed to be helped and wanted to be helped, I really just had to do this by myself. Mm. And I had to be willing to play the long game, which meant that I don't know how long this will take. If I do this work all day, every day, I've got to get better. But to how I will get better, to what extent will I improve, all of these things just have so I just worked on these things and I taught myself lots of little tricks to learn how to read, how to write, how to speak. And it was just basically trial and error, and trying to work these things out with a damaged brain is even more difficult, but it gives a freedom, because who cares if you get it wrong? Everyone thinks that I'm going to be getting it wrong anyway. Yeah. I can do whatever I want to, and I've got the perfect excuse. So I just took that as being it's my world to do whatever I want to do. It doesn't matter if I make mistakes. It doesn't matter if I get better and then get worse. It doesn't matter. I just got to keep working. I just got to keep trying.
That's amazing.
At about the 5-year mark, my writing started to come back. My reading started to come back at about the 7-year mark. My speech was good enough for people to never suspect that I had a brain injury and that I used to have, and that I did have a very major speech impediment. I'd figured out how to walk again with my back injury and with all the nerve issues that came through, especially on my right hand side. I walked properly. I spoke properly. I looked like a normal person. The only thing was is that I was now in my early 30s and I had no job history. I had no qualifications. I had nowhere to go apart from the good people at Coles supermarkets who decided to employ me. Woo-hoo. God bless Coles. They'll employ anybody. I'm proof of that. And I was there for a while. It didn't work. I just kept believing that I did not go through all of that so that I could do this. There's nothing wrong with that. They're wonderful employers. They looked after me. I just believe that God did something special for me, and his direct involvement in my rehab in so many times, even when I was in hospital, the weird and the strange things that happened that cannot possibly be explained in any other way occurred, and I felt like there was something more to my life than doing that, which is why I basically started my own business in 2004. I figured that nobody would employ me except for me, so I'm going to give it
a
shot.
The best boss in the world.
And I can guarantee you that having had a major brain injury and then starting a small business, I don't know which one's harder. I don't know, but that's where I've been now for,
that's amazing,
for that length of time.
Incredible. So. This is Rise and Shine. We're chatting with Stephen Dale this morning. He's the author of the book Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom, which is his life story, and it is quite an amazing story indeed.
Rise and Shine on Australia's Vision Christian Radio.
We are chatting with Stephen Dale this morning on Rise and Shine. An amazing story. I really encourage you to get the book, Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom, the story of your life. And you were just telling us during that song how the book came to be. I mean, that's a story in itself.
As I was just saying to Robbo and Alex, about 10,000 people throughout that time had said, Stephen, you got to write a book. Or, have you got a book? If you've got a book, I'll buy it. And I thought, okay, I'll write a book. I did not understand how long it was going to take to write a book. I'd only just learned how to write it, really. Let alone write a book, let alone know what my voice was, let alone know what I wanted to say. I had one story and that was all that I had. I had the cliff. And I sat down and I wrote it in 6 weeks, and I booked one of the rooms at the Broncos Leagues Club, and I had sold out one of the rooms for July
1. Mm-hmm. So and a book launch for a book you hadn't yet written.
No, I hadn't written it. Didn't have a name of a book, didn't have anything written. I had all these people coming. I had hundreds of people coming to my book launch. I hadn't written a book. And I thought, well, I got to write it now. So sat down, wrote it, 6 weeks, deleted about perfect. Half of it, sent it to the – found a publisher. He found a printer, got them to do it. He said, Stephen, this is running close because it'll take X amount of days and X amount of weeks for blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, look, you don't have that time. I got to get it going. This is the launch date. I got to have my book for the launch date in Brisbane. Anyway, so I had made some changes to some of the names in the books because I didn't want to dob anybody in or make anybody feel bad. But at the last moment, after the book had already been sent to the printers, my brother-in-law told me that one of the names which had been changed right the way through had not been changed on one occasion.
Oh, no.
So we had to get the printer to do this unbelievable thing to print it. I was going to get married the week of my launch. there was everything happening. They did this thing. They said, well, look, all we can do is just print that name and put it on the printing slide and hope that it works. I don't know how it's going to come out, Stephen. We refuse to be held accountable for it. I said, fine, whatever. Just print it because the book launch and my marriage is next week. I've got to have that book in time for the book launch as well as my marriage. I've got things to do for my marriage. Thankfully, not much. My wife organized everything. She said,
you just have to turn up.
This is where you go. This is how you dress. This is the direction you stand and you say these two words. That's it for you. I said, great, I'll take care of all the rest. So we went down there and the books arrived the night before the launch. Got to the launch, got the books sent over to Brisbane. No one knew anything of this. I thought I just won't bring it to anybody's attention. I just say, there's the books out the back there. We had a bit of a talk and books were sold.
Wow, that's amazing.
Just after, this is on our honeymoon, mind you. So... yeah,
that's amazing.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah,
to my my lovely wife. Wow.
Well, that was about 10 years ago that the book was published.
Yes.
So coming up to your 10th anniversary, and also the 10th anniversary of the book, and you mentioned you're going to do like a revised or like a new updated version of it.
Well, there's a few stories that I purposefully left out because either embarrassment or I just thought the book's got enough trauma in it. But over the period, over the last 10 years, a lot of people have said, oh, we wish you had talked about certain issues. We wish you had spoken more about mental health. We wish you had spoken about the mental health issues that you had in bullying, long-term unemployment, brain injury, loss of friends, loss of relationships. We wish you could talk about a bit about that. So I actually have just written a few chapters and changed a few stories and taken a few stories out that really didn't need to be there. I mean, after all, I did write it in 6 weeks. So I've made a change. So that anniversary edition will be out sometime next year.
Mm.
But I encourage people, it's still the same story.
Yep.
When I speak at churches or when I speak at groups or youth groups or businesses or whatever about a number of different things, I always talk about those stories. So they're not secret.
Mm.
But purchasing this book it basically funds my Christian ministry and
that's
it funds
amazing.
A lot of the work that I do with underprivileged people.
That's great. So just very quickly touch on some of the work that you do these days in that area.
Well, I started with my business where all I did was share my story. It very quickly entered the corporate world, the business world, because of the motivational aspect, but also being taught, look, if you can do business coaching as well as do a business presentation, but include this story and your passion into that. So that's what happened almost immediately. Then that went through schools while I was still working with businesses. And while I was still working with those two areas, I got involved in sport, especially rugby league, which I love. Then I went to, would you like to lecture at the university on these particular topics?
Right.
So I started guest lecturing at UQ. And then now I do a business program, for people in the future of business, the future of business and sustainability in business at James Cook University in Brisbane. So there's those particular things that come through. I also do a lot of work with people who have mental health issues by giving a different side to the mental health discussion. So all of those things, as well as working in hospitals and speaking to hospital staff and nurses and basically anyone and everyone over the last, well, it must be close to 20 years that I've been speaking, but it's been wonderful. And this story and the extraordinary things that have happened in my life and the things that I've learned and the truth that I've learned about being involved with the right people and about talking and about speaking and about sharing. But it's also about contribution. If you're not contributing to other people, then you're just taking from other people.
Mm.
And people don't want to keep giving to someone who's continually taking.
Yes.
So there's got to be a contribution. There's a whole lot of programs that I run on all these particular areas. But basically it just comes from all the things that I've been through, as well as the fact that I couldn't speak for a long time, so you learn how to listen to people when you can't speak.
Very good. It's an amazing story. Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom. You can get a copy of it at smilingtiger.com.au. That's Stephen Dale's website, smilingtiger.com. rockauthentic.com.au. Mate, we've only just scratched the surface of your story today, but I really appreciate you coming in and sharing it. It's just amazing.
Thank you very much.
How God protected you that night particularly, but what he's done with you since then is amazing as well. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
SmilingTiger.com.au is the place to go to get that book, Bouncing Back When You Hit Rock Bottom, and to find out more about the great work that Stephen Dale does.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.